Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, where the hell were you last night?
Basically, where I was last night was, I don't think I should name the shul. I think we live in a time where security is a bit rum for everybody. Muslims are having a bad time too, but for Jews. And so I was at a synagogue not far from here, an Orthodox synagogue, a United Synagogue shul. And I showed up to do an onstage interview with the rabbi. He's a sort of 75-year-old guy, a rabbi emeritus. Very, very funny man. So I went on stage. I was just invited by my aunt. My aunt Judith, anyway. She's just very involved in the shul and wanted to get me along. I think David Baddiel said no, you know. And so let's get Jars along to go and get interviewed by this guy. And he's brilliant. And it was basically a lovely thing. And my aunt, no doubt, Shepping Nachas.
You have to get a translator.
No, I think people, if they can't speak Yiddish, they go listen to another podcast.
But my Yiddish isn't bad, and I didn't know what Shlepen Nachas.
Shepping Nachas just means experiencing. Mm-hmm. Shepping Nachas means experiencing pride in your family. So yeah. When my aunt says, I tell you what, my nephew, Giles Coram, will come and... Hard to believe that I should be considered anything, but that's her basically Shepping Nachas. I first heard the phrase from my cousin Lester Vickers, who, talking about my great-grandpa Harry, born in Plonsk in 1885, died in London in 1976, Yiddish as a first language, English never all that great. In about 1974, when his grandson, Alan Coram, my father, was sort of first on the TV, he was on Call My Bluff in the old days with Frank Muir, Arthur Marshall, hosted by Robert Robinson, and he was on there giving his definitions, and Arthur Marshall, that's Alan Corran. My great-grandpa Harry was apparently sitting in his big leather chair, 80 years old, whiskey in one hand, fat cigar, and said, now this is Nachas. Last week on the podcast, I talked about, you know, perhaps my ongoing, long-term support for the State of Israel, coming from being Jewish and therefore being a Zionist and supporting the existence of the State of Israel and its right to defend itself, sort of no matter what, how it was slightly compromised as the assault on Gaza went on and the assault on Rafah was sort of imminent, 30,000 dead now, and I'm starting to look at this really, really massive sort of, it's getting harder for me to support the government, support Netanyahu, to say, yes, this is fine, because it looks to me, I genuinely start to ask myself, is it the best way to get the hostages back?
Actually, on the podcast last week, we didn't actually address those questions particularly. Our central question was, does Netanyahu bear responsibility for the reputation of Jews worldwide? And that's really
that,
all we
well,
talked
that was
about.
No, that yes, that was your summation of the debate so far, and it was well crystallised. But it came in the context of my support perhaps not being unequivocal. And you're right; it did say yes, and should Israel behave differently for anyway? Yeah. Whatever it was, I thought broadly harmless. I decided not to write the piece.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Recall,
because I didn't want my column to look in any way like a weakening of my support for Israel, which I feel needs my support, tacit support. So I didn't want to look like that. And then I just got a call from my uncle on the day before, going, yeah, looking forward to you. It's going to be great. Yeah, you know, you've talked to Shlomo. Listen, I don't know, you know, there was this thing with a podcast and I went, oh God, it's there. Anyway, my uncle sounded a little bit, he was just like, maybe it won't come up, or maybe don't talk about that. And he wanted to tell me that Shlomo, the rabbi, had a personal experience of you know, the tragic end of
violence
terror.
Violence in the Middle East,
And I was thinking, okay, fine, but I'm never going to say anything of which someone whose relatives had been killed by terrorists.
It's always the way with you. People are like, oh yeah, Giles this, Giles that. And then when they've actually got you, they realise they've got a tiger by the tail and everyone suddenly gets really
You're saying there was
really
a
nervous.
Brief experiencing of your entire life.
Yeah. They oh my fucking God, what is he actually going to do or say? They don't know that the really alarming things that you do and say are so completely wild and unpredictable that the last, they're not going to happen on stage. But they don't know that. Well, no, they suddenly project and think, oh my God, what is he going to say? He's a wild man.
You did the same thing. You said, because I then, after my uncle called, then the rabbi called, just to clarify, look, I've heard the podcast, I don't agree. We could talk to each other about it one day on a podcast even. You know, I don't agree with you, but like, so I think we won't talk about that really.
Let's leave that alone.
He's a totally jolly fellow, and he's like, from where he's standing, everyone's allowed to think the things that they think, but let's not go there. He was quite reasonable. You then said, oh look, make sure they're not recording it. I don't want you to say, what if you say something terrible? What if you, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what could I say? Of all the people I'm going to be geared up to not upset, it is lots of North London Jewish people and a rabbi and my dear aunt and uncle. They are the people I'm...
On your way out, I heard you make a joke that I did not want recorded or filmed.
Really?
Yes, I'm not going to tell it here. And it wasn't a joke, it was a passing comment. But no, there are plenty of people who, when they do public appearances like that, they say that no audio or video recording.
No, but funnily enough, the rabbi asked me, it would be okay, because there was some person who wasn't going to be able to be there who wanted to hear it. And could is it okay if they recorded it?
And you, yes. You went, no, fuck off.
But anyway, but in the end, it was all just like amazingly funny, and he was fine. And then he did bring up Israel, and it was all totally.
Oh,
sure.
He did bring up Israel.
Yeah, in the end, he did.
And what did you say?
I can't remember. I said, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," and the evening closed down and everything. No, it was all top. It was all top gas.
Neil, we're going to have to cut that out.
No, we're not. No, that was like fine. That was the big payoff.
Was it?
Then you be all so oversensitive now. That's where Shlomo's going to laugh. Well, condemning hell.
While making a few phone calls. Okay, so a story I really liked this week was the story, which is not a nice story, but I liked the... unless you've got something on the running order that you want to talk about.
Oh, in the running order?
Yeah.
The not a nice story murder.
Amidst the twits, yeah.
The murder couple. Yeah, we did decide to do that, but we were going to start with Bennifer.
Let's start...
with your... I had a decision last night... The night before the podcast, as I was nervously pacing the room, wondering what, oh my God, I've got to go to the shul, they're going to lynch me, but you know.
Yeah.
I said, tell you what, fuck all to talk about on the podcast. Read Kevin Maher.
Kevin Maher.
It's an Irish name, maybe it's pronounced Smith.
Possibly.
Collection of letters.
I don't think it's pronounced Smith.
And on the front of the Times yesterday, there was this picture of...
Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez.
And then Kevin's reviewed this... baffling piece of media.
Absolutely baffling. The greatest love story never told, described by Kevin as an indecently compelling backstage gawp. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's a documentary behind the making of a movie or a music video or something.
She either did make or tried to make a long musical, a long album with a video element to it about her life based on a book that Ben Affleck had made of like photos scrapbook
for
her.
This kind of mad scrapbook.
About how much he loved her because he's, I don't know the mental health and drug and booze background of Ben Affleck, but he's not a well guy, is he?
He looks a little fragile to me. We watched it because we were just sort of, as curious as anyone else about these two strange people. And it was absolutely, like, completely weird. And it wasn't really anything about their relationship. I like J-Lo. I think she's great and funny and interesting. But it wasn't a great or funny and interesting piece of media. It was basically her in kind of dance rehearsals and stressing out about the fact that no one would finance this project and she had to sort of pay for it herself. At the beginning, she says, you know, I've been married 4 times and I wanted to project to the outside that I'm strong and everything was on purpose and it was all great, but it was all bullshit and in the inside I was falling apart. Okay, show me that.
Yeah.
I want to see that. I want to know what happened with her other marriages.
What I want to say is this. The reason we watched it for the podcast, possibly for a column, more for the podcast, how would a film of the truth of our life look? So this is very American Hollywood way of looking at a marriage.
Yeah.
What would our film look like? Or possibly our book. Let me ask you, Esther, you made a little book called The Greatest Love Story Never Told.
Yeah.
And you gave it to me. What would be in it?
Just cruel emails, like my greatest hits of cruel emails to you.
So the reason that we are married and sort of inverted commas love each other is always been set by you to be the fact that we're both equally mean. Your problem basically in previous relationships was that you were mean and your boyfriends wanted you to be nicer.
Yes.
And I didn't really give a fuck.
No,
so then
no.
You stayed.
And in like, you're like, you don't care if I'm mean.
Yeah, so
and if I say something mean, you think it's quite funny.
So then our greatest story, love never told or whatever, is just
all the mean things that we said about people.
Of mean, bitchy shit. Yes. A relationship held together by not really liking any of our friends.
Yeah. And like
or family or
how
anything.
Like when we go to a party together, like how like you've already noticed all the terrible things about the party before I even tell you what they are. That's like
I suppose my feeling with the podcast is we do this every week, don't we? This really is the truth of our relationship.
Yes,
it's
it is.
Really
yeah.
Boring and we hate each other and are able to behave for an hour because Neil shows up.
Yeah.
And we still argue about
everything.
Tea or coffee. But there's a very British version of
there
the marriage.
There is, exactly.
With this, the murder, and we don't think murder is funny and it's a sad story and we're not going to allude to it or name them, but this woman who murdered her husband with, I think, gardening shears in the back while he was wheeling a wheelbarrow, but parallels have been drawn by the media with the twits.
So Sean Brunton, who's the KC for the prosecution, said their relationship might remind those present of the twits. And that really chimed with me because I have referred to us as being like the twits, kind of, many times. And I think marriages do kind of...
Explain what the twits were like.
Okay, so the twits is a story by Roald Dahl. It's for children. It's quite a gruesome story about this old, ugly, nasty couple who play horrible tricks on each other because they're married, but they hate each other. The two that everybody remembers is the Mr. Twit convinces Mrs. Twit that she's got the shrinks. So Mrs. Twit has walks with a walking stick, and every night Mr. Twit goes into his shed at the bottom of the garden and cuts out discs of wood and attaches them to the bottom of her walking stick and also to the bottom of her chair. So she thinks that she's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And she says, I'm getting shorter. And he says, no, you've got the deadly shrinks. And then she gets her own back on Mr. Twit by mixing worms in with his spaghetti and then kind of laughing and saying, you've been eating worms.
So they're like the twits. They're this married couple, but essentially expressing their love by being horrid to each other.
It is a tension, isn't it? It's kind of a tension.
Is there anything you want to confess to?
Well, it made me think of the fact that I am happy to confess to all of the things I do to wind you up, but you would never, ever confess to doing anything on purpose to wind me up, even though I know that you do.
So what are the things? So because I'm trying to now imagine a film where really, if you'd had any imagination, Jennifer Lopez would have remade The Twits with her and Ben, and you might have actually seen Ben going and putting little coins underneath, and she's got this, you've got the shrinks. And she's obviously, you know, she's a...
I have in the past.
Or you're getting ugly. It would be a thing to do with her ass being big. He'd like gradually be padding it out and making her think that. And she'd have to make him think he was stupid by having whole sets of books reprinted with the letters back to front so that Ben couldn't read them even more slowly than he read them before. And she's getting a bigger ass and he's getting thicker and thicker. But
yeah.
So, you know, that because that's the... We rather revel in that. That's a British response to... relationship rather than
a little book of the never-ending
story. But think about all the time and effort that went into Mr. Twit making her think that she's got the shrinks.
Because that's real love.
Yeah.
So you're saying the thing where you like hide all my glasses so that I have to sit down, I have to run around going, I have to ask you where my glasses are so that you can roll your eyes. And
what do I do on purpose to really annoy? I did once consider turning quite a lot of your phone's mobile data feeds off so that you couldn't look at social media unless you were connected to Wi-Fi.
About time on Twitter or something.
No, this was quite recently.
Just to be horrid.
Just because it's annoying when you're looking at
Twitter
when we're out.
You don't season any of the food you cook for me. So it's impossible for me to look grateful.
You, on purpose... leave the bathroom window wide open to make the bathroom fucking freezing cold.
No, when I get in the shower,
yeah.
I open the window to let the steam out. Uh-huh. You open the window after the shower when the water's already condensed.
I was having a bath in like November, and you came in wanting to open the window while I was
having a bath. I
wanted
the people on the housing estate to see your boob because it turns me on to think of you being looked at.
So what are the other things that you do on purpose to wind
me
up?
No, the things that you do on purpose, like you make the bed without pulling the counterpane
now
over the top
you have
so
to say,
that the pillows are...
Now you have to confess the things you do on purpose to wind me up. When you edit the fridge by just taking everything out of the fridge that you think needs to go on in the bin and then leaving it
what
on the top.
What about the fact that you deliberately, is there, you leave sliced bread in the plastic bag on top of the counter just so that it grows blue mold by the end of the day?
I put everything away. I put everything away eventually.
But in a random assortment of fridges and cupboards so that I never know where anything is.
Oh, you take, when you, on the, like, once a month when you unload the dishwasher, you put things in the most fucking weird places ever. Like the melamine plates, which obviously go in the drawer by the toaster. You just, like, randomly, like, shove them, like,
no,
in wherever.
No, sometimes I put them up with the
plate. Because you can't be bothered to put them in the
right sometimes.
Place. That's really bad.
Every time. But the marigold gloves that you leave deliberately
I
on
don't.
The sink, so that when you open and shut the cupboard under the sink, it always gets trapped in the fingers of the marigold.
Why are you opening and shutting the
I
cupboard underneath
them
the thing?
And put them on a bull clip and hang them on the peg that I fucking deliberately drilled into the wall.
I did that.
That you
I did
know
that.
I did, and you never ever put the gloves on it ever.
So sometimes what I do
is I scrumple the gloves up into a mean little ball.
Yes.
Put a little bit of water inside the glove and then stuff them right at the back behind the plates so that you have.
I always hang them back up. If I know you're home, I always hang them back up because I hate it when you scrumple them up and put them on the side. It's so annoying.
Well, the fact that you deliberately leave the dishwasher open, right? You leave the dishwasher open, making horrible smells just to get your revenge back because you think I leave the cutlery.
It's like living on the set of The Sixth Sense. You leave every fucking cupboard and door and drawer
open. Not The Sixth
open.
Sense, it's Sleeping with the Enemy.
No, it's The Sixth Sense.
Sleeping with the Enemy.
No, that's when
Jennifer thingy comes back and she finds...
Jennifer? Who's Jennifer? Julia Roberts.
The thin bird out of the porn
Julia
movie.
Roberts.
Yeah, Julia Roberts.
No, but porn, what are you talking about?
Pretty Woman.
No, she opens the cupboards
and Kevin Kline has put all the towels in order, like I do. And she knows the serial killer's back in
Let's
town.
Let's move on.
That's what I'm saying. That's what the Benefit love story should have been.
It should have been like that. It would have been way better. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay, look, here's what we're going to do now.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the American attempts to silence Peppa Pig, mm-hmm. and then we'll go from there into the fact that World Book Day is finally
cancelled.
Getting a slap in the face for just being a ridiculous dressing up, and then talk about the fact that toddlers can't even arrive at school able to shit in the right hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So that seems to me like a nice family way to proceed with the podcast. Yeah. So story one, open up the Times today, and what's on page three?
The story is that Americans are...
Peppa's piggish antics.
All over the US, the show Peppa Pig was blamed for causing otherwise healthy American children to speak with British accents, which I obviously fell about laughing because not Kitty, but Sam certainly consumes quite a lot of terrible American YouTubers.
But they all did consume lots of American stuff, and they watch... they have the corrective of The Inbetweeners and Friday Night Dinner and stuff, but they watch an awful lot of Family Guy, and then an awful lot of that Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
And then when they were little, their iPad stuff, they watch a lot of, you know, famously American cartoons. For 80 years, we Brits, and even more the French, are even more horrified, oh God, Americans are turning our children American.
Yeah.
Kitty...
Avec le jean.
Kitty will finish her dinner and say, I'm done. You know what? I'm done. Thank you very much, Peter. I've finished my dinner. Yeah. But she'll go, I'm done. And they'll say, can I get... They use these Americanisms, even our very literate children. And so it's quite funny that we're getting some revenge.
Yes, exactly. It's very, very funny that we're getting our revenge on Americans with our sort of Peppa Pig-isms. Don't let your kids watch Peppa Pig, warned a commenter beneath a review of the show.
It's partly her attitude as well. So they said that Americans have noticed, American parents of four-year-olds and five-year-olds, and that photo is of like a Peppa Pig world in Florida. It is massive over there. They've noticed that she's an arsehole, you know. Remember when Kitty was behaving like Peppa Pig?
Peppa is rude, bossy, a liar, tattletale, and more. She bullies her daddy. She used to call you silly daddy. I mean, I don't think
that... She did. That was when she was three. She would say silly daddy. And there was that whole narrative about whether or not fathers are being traduced
by Daddy Pig. Yeah, exactly.
What can Peppa Pig teach the Americans?
Ah, interesting. Yeah, that's quite good, actually. That might be quite good for a column.
It's probably a single item in the notebook. The point is it's revenge for years of our...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okie dokie.
But that used to be the only culture that children consumed. And I think that segues into the story. Maybe it's a nightmare for the editor if I segue it. But still, who cares? If that segues into the story...
Neil.
he'll find a way. It segues into the notion of World Book Day, which there's now finally been a backlash against the fact that it's just a load of little illiterate pee-the-pants toddlers going to school dressed as Harry Potter. And nobody reads a fucking book. Or they would go dressed as Peppa Pig.
We did. I mean, the problem is, right, is that I am happy not doing any sort of competitive parenting at all. It's fine. Once you lay down a challenge to me, I'm going to go mad.
And it was the wrong sort of challenge. Yeah. This is the point. They have now decided that World Book Day, when everyone dresses up in these, literally, it's okay if you dress your kid up in like a little dress that she's got, and maybe she looks a little bit like Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz. But to go and buy, as they did at the very privileged primary school our kids were at, load of plastic, crappy, disposable wands and hats and da-da-da. And the kids go, and these children don't really read. Be competitive. Our children read when they were little. We read to them a lot. We were good literary parents. So if you want to, that's the competitive parenting. Haha, fuck you. Not look at my child dressed up as
Hermione Granger. Dressing up, it's not that. That's the thing. It's not anything to do with books. It's to do with your parents' disposable time and creativity, basically. That's what it is, and that's why it's so stupid. And obviously, people panic and just because you know it's peer pressure. They just Amazon a Harry Potter costume
because the parents can't read either.
No, it isn't that.
It is. The parents aren't interested in books. You can't get children into books, into a subliterate society that we live in now, where books are not treasured or valued, and everyone gets their culture from their phones and their stupid Netflix things. I endlessly retort to the parent who we obviously don't name or even identify the school, who literally told me that he was in finance, he was disappointed that this school, his child was expected to spend so much time reading books. What's he going to learn from books? Books aren't going to teach him how to gain clients, he said to me with a straight face. And I thought, fucking hell, he's the kind of bloke who sends his kid to World Book Day dressed as Spider-Man because he thinks it's a fucking book, because he's a Philistine.
Well, I think being a Philistine is okay. And I think that the fetishization of reading, particularly fiction, particularly in adults, is dumb. Anyway, I'm very glad to see the back of World Book Day. I thought it was very, very, very annoying.
We can segue into the next story, for Neil's intense delight.
Yeah.
Out of the fact that these children arrive at school unable to read, so they have to dress up as Spider-Man. Now we discover they're unable to go to the loo either. And isn't that the front of today's paper?
Parents.
Half of parents believe they should not have full responsibility for toilet training their child, according to a survey. Only 16% of parents think it's their job to teach children how to read. But you read on the loo. The two go together. That's all I've ever taught my son is he grabs a book as he hustles off touching cloth to go release the turtle head. With half of teachers saying it's getting worse, and there are one teacher said, I feel like we're not teaching as much in the first year now as we used to. It's more babysitting and teaching the basic skills. So
there is a lot of defensiveness over the revelation in lockdown that school was very much you know, a decent chunk of school is childcare.
Yeah.
It really is.
But the thing
and
about
teachers
the
do not think of themselves as childcare providers. And I'm sympathetic to that, but...
So teachers, why do you think that children are arriving unable to go to the loo?
I would be interested to see actually how much worse the problem is getting. I think that reception age children can be expected to have a couple of accidents a term. They're very little. They're rising five. They're in a new environment. They get overexcited and overstimulated. And they wet themselves.
And they just...
Yeah. And... I remember when I started secondary school, there were people who had arrived from primary school with other people. And they had stories
about...
And
you weed yourself the other day when you were laughing. That's
me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had two children. I don't wee myself because I'm too busy doing cars.
I do admit there was Margaret P. the Pants Duckworth at my baby school when we were four, and she weed, and everyone there was a wee the pants a little bit later as well.
Yeah, of course.
But
what are we talking?
But
right?
potty
are
training, we... doing a poo, and all that kind of thing. But why do you think that now parents are not trying as hard to potty train their children?
Well, I think it is. I think two things. I think that parents in general have been trained over the last kind of 15 years or so to devolve everything to quote unquote experts, which I think is just the cause of an enormous number of problems. I also think it's the modern nappy. Modern nappies are amazing. And cloth nappies haven't been around for an awfully long time. But for example, you know, my big sister had cloth nappies. You know, so they're in the sort of 70s, cloth nappies were around.
So you're saying Harriet wees herself all the time?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that a cloth nappy is pretty unpleasant.
So you have to change it?
Yeah, so the child notices and it's not nice and wants to get out of the
cloth nappy. And screams and gets nappy rash, all these
and
things.
Also, the parents are like, fuck this shit, let's get out of it. Whereas your modern disposable nappy is amazing for, you know, the general convenience of it, but there's less incentive to get out.
So you're saying, because I recall that our kids walking around with their thing just hanging off them, full of piss, days that this thing would hold, so we didn't need to bother to change them really ever.
Right.
These are such good nappies. I wear these nappies to go to the pub. You have three or four pints and you don't fancy going out the back on a cold night. You just stand at the bar drinking and whittling into your Pampers.
I know that you were joking about the hanging nappy, but I have to say, a hanging nappy was the thing that turned my stomach more than anything else in the world. If anything...
Sam walking along with it swinging like
in
a
the morning.
Rhino ball. It's this huge, great thing. It weighed as much as he did. He'd emptied his entire body weight and he was running along.
First thing in the morning, yes. And I would change it pretty swiftly because I remember the hanging nappy. And the hanging nappy
how much he used
was
to piss.
Absolutely disgusting. So I'm sympathetic about children arriving. I mean, I don't know what they're talking. Are they talking people, like children sort of... reception age children arriving in nappies, that's a bit extreme. The bit arriving unable to read, I mean what are you talking? Can they not identify their numbers? You know what I mean?
No, we're just talking about a general problem where parents don't teach their children how to wee and poo properly, so they arrive at school with no self-respect, unable to wee and poo. All they can do on World Book Day is dress up like Peppa Pig, which is making the Americans think that their culture is at risk.
Nice summation.
You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
To find out what I wrote about in the end, pick up a copy of the paper or treat yourselves to a digital subscription.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project... there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.